We'll need a Tanakh if anybody would mind. They have their Tanakh, I think, that has also an English translation. I don't know, I don't think we need the English, but. Okay, so let's see where we can start the new week. I have it marked off here that we got up to Daf Yudah Amid Beis towards the bottom. And we're up to Reb Shimon Gamliel. Thanks. Maybe, Steve, if you don't mind, if you could open up to Melachim Beis, the very end, the last few psukim, Melachim Beis. So where are we here on Daf Yud Amid Beis? Let's count up from the bottom of the page, and you'll see should start with Hani, I think. Just one second. Yeah, let's start with the two dots above Tosus Chishev. You see Tosus Chishuv? So above that you'll see two dots. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer. Yes?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's where I think we got up to last week. Okay. So let's take a look at the Mishnah just to refresh our memories. And we're talking about Ibur Shana. Now, Ibur Shana, of course, means to add the extra month of Adar. And there are various reasons, which we'll get to later on in the Sugya, as to why Beis Din would make that shikul, make that decision, that it's worth it to add an extra month to the year. So the Mishnah says the following. This you'll see approximately 8 lines down from the top. The last word in the line is Ibur. The first word in the line is Rabbi Shmuel. So Ibur HaChodesh B'Shlosha. Ibur HaShana B'Shlosha Divrei Rabbi Meir. So according to Rabbi Meir, the same 3 judges that are acceptable in terms of the Jewish calendar, which means they can determine when the new month is, whether it's a Mole or a Choser, that same Beis Din, made up of 3 judges, according to Rabbi Meir, could decide anything that's relevant to the calendar, even something as radical and as far-reaching as adding an extra month. And this is, of course, as we discussed, because of the discrepancy between the lunar calendar and the solar calendar. So every couple of years, they would add another month. And all we need is a Beis Din of Shlosha, that's Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, on the one hand, admits that Rabbi Meir is right, that the Shlosha Maschilin, that the beginning of the process is with Shlosha Dayanim. We're going to try to understand what this means, the beginning of the process of Ibur Shonas with 3 judges. If the 3 judges are empowered and authorized to begin the process of Ibur Shana, why can't they complete the process and just declare a Shana Muberes and we'll add an extra Adar? But yet, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, no, we're not going to decide as a final ruling for Ibur Shana until we go on beyond the 3. And that is B'chamisha Nosim V'Nosnin. There's what's called Masa Umatan. There's going to be deliberations until finally those 5 judges will come to the conclusion that at least the majority of these 5, let's say 3 out of the 5, agree with that consensus that they should go ahead and be Ba'abra the Shana. So we've gotten from 3 to the next level of 5. And then Gomrim B'Shiva, but when we finally want to establish the Gemar Din and the final enactment, the final decision, we need 7 judges. However, in Gomrim B'Shlosha Muberes, that B'Dieved, if the 3 judges made a decision on their own, we'll have to see whether it's a unanimous decision or a majority decision, but they decided on their own, there's a little bit of audacity, a little bit of chutzpah on that part, but they decided, we want to be Ma'abra the Shana, they have a consensus, and they do so, then Me'uberes, then even Rabbi Shmuel agrees that post facto will accept that Ibur. Now Rashi here on the Mishnah, Dibra Maschil Ibur Ashana, he starts hinting at some of the reasons why we would want to be Ma'abra the Shana. That's what are the necessary elements in the equation for the deliberation of Bezdin. He doesn't go into too much detail because he says that you should know Kidamrina B'Gemara, that the Gemara itself is going to deal with these various reasons, and they have to do with what's called Mipnei Ha'aviv VeHatkufa. So the Tkufa has something to do with equinox, and we'll get to that again in the sugya later on. And Aviv, I think we've already mentioned that it's very important both from an agricultural perspective and from perspective of what we call Chag HaAviv, which is Chag HaPesach, to make sure that we shouldn't be lagging behind too much behind the solar calendar, because at some point or another it's going to have an impact on the month of Nisan, and specifically the holiday of Pesach. Also, we're going to have other agricultural halachic considerations, like, for example, although the period of time for the tvua to reach its, the tvua means the five species of grains to reach its growth, would be in the month of Nisan, but when it comes to Peros HaIlon, the Mishnah establishes Rosh Hashanah that Atzeres time, which is Chag HaShavuos, that's the time for the Peros HaIlon, that's when they grow. If there's going to be too much of a discrepancy between our calendar and determining when is Nisan and when is Sivan, but both for Pesach and for Shavuos, we'll see how it's going to affect the nature of the month of Nisan as the month of what's called Bikur HaTvua, the month of Atzeres, the month of Sivan as Bikur HaPeros, Peros HaIlon, and so forth. There are various agricultural relationships between the holidays and the calendar has to adjust in such a way that the holidays should be related to the agricultural produce, and that's going to be a problem because the agricultural produce depends upon the solar calendar, not on the lunar calendar. So again, as I said, we're going to have to get into this whole question of what are the motivating factors for Ibur Shana, but suffice it to say that they're very complex, and it's not just that Beis Din decides, you know, with a snap of a finger that we're going to add another month and make it into a Shana Muperes. There has to be quite a bit of deliberations until we finally reach the level of seven judges. So in an ideal way, the final decision of Ibur Shana, says Rabbi Shmuel, will be in the hands of how many judges? Seven judges. That's the magic number seven. And I'm always amazed at the significance of the number seven. You know, of course, even for any nation on the face of the earth, the week is made up of 7 days. But from a Jewish point of view, I mean, the 7-day week goes back to the creation of the universe, God's creation. The seventh day has a special status. But the number seven keeps repeating itself over and over again. You know, you talk about Shemitah as being the seventh year of a cycle of 7 years, right? You talk about Yovel, you have seven cycles of 7 years. You know, you talk about Pesach is a holiday made up of 7 days. The same is true for Sukkot. And it just goes on and on. You know, there's a Gemara in Masechta Megillah, which we covered not long ago, and the Gemara says that when a decision has to be made by the city, then there are seven representatives of the city. That's called the Shiva Tuvei Ha'ir. And once again, the number seven appears. And in the case of Ibur HaShana, according to Rabbi Shmuel, the ultimate Beis Din for the final decision to be Ma'abra the Shana is made up of seven judges. So now the Gemara here on Daf Yudam and Beis is going to analyze Rabbi Shmuel and Amishka based on a braisa. Tanya, Ketzad. What does Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel mean when he says we start with three and then we jack it up to five, adding two other judges to the court, and then we add another two judges, jacking it up to seven? Maschilin. We start with Shlosha. Ubachamisha nosim v'nosim v'gomer v'shiva. What's this all about? So the Brisa really fleshes this out, and it says the following: the whole process of Ibur Shana begins with one single judge. And he turns to the other two judges that are sitting on his court. Echad Omer, and he turns to the other two and he says, Leshev. Leshev means, let's be koveya, let's set up a yeshivas bezdin. And that means we have to be koveya, a yeshivas bezdin, for the purpose of Ibur Shana. Because in the view of this one particular judge, we have enough of a reason and a necessity to add another month to the year because of all those agricultural halachic considerations that we mentioned, which we're going to study at great length. So now he turns to the two judges. And what do they say? Shnayim Omrim Shalo Yeshev. He doesn't luck out, this one judge, so to speak, because the other two judges are absolutely convinced that this is an exercise of futility, there's no purpose, there's no reason to justify a yeshiva's bezdin. We don't want to get involved. There's no need for the year to be a shana muberes. So in such a case, the halacha is batel yachid b'miuto. The yachid loses his status in the face of the rov, of the majority. And therefore this initiative will never actually get off the ground. However, shnayim omrim leshev, if two judges say that we have to deliberate, there's enough of a reason for ibur shana, echad omer shalo leshev, but when they turn to the third judge, he says, no, I don't think there's no need to be ma'abra the shana. So in such a case, we're going to force the third judge to join up with the other two, and that's called achrei rabim lahatos, that the Torah relies on the majority. Here, two out of three of the judges say that it's about time that we made a decision and deliberate very carefully whether we should be ma'abra the shana. And when I say carefully, I mean seriously, because this whole sugya that we're about to learn is built on the predicate that we, Bezdin here, is involved in something that really belongs up in the heavens. So this is something of a major, major decision. So now what we have is that the two persevered over the third. So we have a Bezdin made up of how many? Three. Then Mosifin Aleim Od Shnayim. Now we're going to jack up the number by adding another two judges. We now have a court made up of five judges. Again, you can't add one judge because that would make it into what?
Yod.
A Bezdin Shakel, right? We need a Bezdin Nota. So we add two judges, and now we're up to five judges. And at this point, we have an open deliberation amongst five judges. Nosim v'nosim midavar. So at the end of the deliberation, we're going to get up and stand up for a vote. Shnayim omrim tzricha, u'shlosh omrim eino tzricha. In this case, only two out of the five judges advocate Ibur Shana. The three dissenting judges make up the majority. Is batlu shnayim b'miutam. And at this point, the entire process of Ibur Shana dies a premature death. It's aborted right there because we already have a majority in a bezdin of five that have issued a decision that we don't have just cause for Ibur Shana. However, Shlosha Omrim Tzricha, Shnayim Omrim Tzricha, now we have a majority decision that the year needs Ibur, so we have three out of five, is then the two judges who make up the minority, the descendant, they are batel to the other three judges, and now we have a basin of five judges. But that's not enough. Mosifin Aleim V'od Shnayim. We want to jack up the number of judges here to the number seven by adding another two to the five. And the answer is the rule She'ein Minyan Pachos Mishiva Dayanim. That the number of judges to finally rule on Ibur Shana should not be less than seven. What's going to be with the Eved that we saw the Mishnah is going to address that. Okay, Rabosa, at this point I have to present to you two main issues in the Rishonim, major controversies about how to learn, how to interpret the Braisa that we just learned. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
Are you psyched up for this?
Yes.
Again, this is, and at the end, if I'm going to quiz you, and I'm going to ask you if there's any relationship between these two issues, because the names change, and that sort of indicates that they're two independent controversies, but there may be some sort of a logical connection. That's what you're going to have to tell me. So if you like to write notes, then the first name that you want to write on your page is the Yad Ramah, Reish Mem Hei, who is one of the most significant Rishonim on the Masechta Sanhedrin. He wrote extensively. This must have been his favorite pet Masechta, and he was one of the Chachmei Sfarad from Spain, and he lived probably about a little bit more than nine centuries ago, and he writes the following. And you'll see how he incurs the wrath of some other Rishonim, but it's interesting to see what he has to say. Very fascinating, his logic. He says the following. This whole requirement of seven judges is questionable. He says, I understand if there was a dispute and there was one opinion in favor of Ibur Shudder, there were dissenting opinions against Ibur Shudder, that was called Chiluke Deos. And those Chiluke Deos popped up both in the case of the three judges, and we finally got to the stage where two out of three judges said yay, and then we got to the stage of Chamisha, and then we have three judges that said yay, but we still have two judges that said nay. He says, in that case, I understand that we have to add judges in order to beef up the number on the court to get to seven. But we don't necessarily have to get to seven, even in the ideal situation. We don't even necessarily have to get to five. But rather, if we can get three judges that have a unanimous opinion without any dissension in favor of Ibur Shana, then we could be Ma'abar the Shana with three judges, even according to Rabbi Shmuel. So again, to read the language of the Yad Ramah, he says, in Miskima Dash Loshtam, if there was a unanimous agreement, Shetzarach Li'aber, then Ein Mo Sifin Aleim Ma'uma, that we don't have to add any judges. We have a full court of three judges. They are empowered with the authority to be Ma'abar the Shana, and there's no dissension. Heim Atzvam Yoshvim Ma'arvim Es Hashan, again, Dikta Ma'isa, finito. Three judges will suffice. So that's what the Mishnah means when it says Gamru Bishlosha Muberes. What it means that the extra month of Adar is necessitated by the Halacha, not because of B'dieved, the way we interpret the Mishnah. Says the Yad Ramah, that's not what the Mishnah has in mind. The Mishnah has in mind Gamru Bishlosha, not B'dieved, what happens if they took they had the audacity to take it upon themselves to make that decision. But rather, Gamru Bishlosha means the decision was a unanimous decision. Mm-hmm. Gamru Kol Ashlosha. That's how the Yad Ramah is learning the Mishnah. Okay. And in such a case, there's no need to go to the next step of adding two judges to number five. However, Nechleku B'deo Sehem, once we have a dissenting view, then there's a controversy within the Bezdin. Us, then Halacha is, that because Echad Omer, one says, Li'aber, Shnayim Omer, Shalo Li'aber, Batal Yochav Yoshvin Klal. But if Shnayim Omer Li'aber, two of the three say Li'aber, the Echad Omer Shalo Li'aber, is Mosifim Od Shnayim Leishay V'Ladun. So now we have a Bezdin of five. Why? Because the one judge amongst the three who had a dissenting opinion, he already, so to speak, casts a doubt on this Bezdin. So in other words, the Yad Ramah understands that there are two different entities of Bezdin in Ibur Shana. There's one entity of Bezdin where there's a unanimous decision, and there's one where there's a majority decision. The difference is going to be that we don't want to make a decision based on a Bezdin of majority when there's dissenting, with a dissenting view, and even if there's only one dissenter, until we get to the holiest level, the final level, which is what number?
Seven.
Until we get to seven, if on the other hand we have a unanimous decision, either a unanimous decision of three, or if one of the dissenters changes his mind when we added another two, so we went up from a bezdin of three to a bezdin of five, and now we're going to start the deliberations again, and all of a sudden the one dissenter is going to realize, you know, that he's really, going up... what's the phrase? Piping the wrong horn, whatever it is. You know, that he realized that, you know, four out of the five judges have absolutely convinced him that there's a necessity to be Ma'abar the Shana. At that point, he votes together with the majority because he realizes that their logic is overwhelming, and he accepts their logic. Says the Yad Ramah at that point, gandik, finito. Now we can be ma'abir l'shana based on a court of five judges. However, im lo hiskimu kol hachamisha, if we still have a dissenting view, let's say, for example, three are in favor of the Yibur Shana, two are opposed, then we have to add, the majority bezdin of five is not sufficient, then we have to add another two judges to get to the final stage, the ultimate bezdin for Kiddush, for Yibur Shana, and that is a bezdin of what?
Seven.
Of seven. This is the opinion of the Yad Ramah. So again, Rabosai, the Yad Ramah is based on two logical premises. When I say logical, I mean, I'm not, soon we'll see that not everyone agrees to this logic, but in his mind, these are two logical assumptions. Assumption number one is that the need to add Dayanim is a result of dissension. If there was no dissension, and the Beis Din is unanimous, whether it's a Beis Din of Shlosha, or eventually if one of the dissenters changes his mind at the level of five, and we have a Beis Din of Chamisha, and there's a unanimous decision, then they have the power, without going on to seven, to be Ma'abra the Shon. That's premise number one. Premise number two, the Yad Ramah assumes that there's a fundamental difference between two types of Beis Din. The Halacha will categorically distinguish between a Beis Din of Rov and a Beis Din of Kulam, unanimity, if there's such a word. I probably invented that word.
Unanimity.
Okay, I wasn't so far off. I was close. I thought I was inventing a new word, you know, and Miriam would have to owe me a debt for that, right? So, but anyway, so it comes out like this, that according to the Yad Ramah's second premise, once we have a dissension, although we still have a majority, which normally would be enough in other halachas to hand down a decision, but because there's this ideal of seven, which is a special power and authority that's vested in a Beis Din of Shiva, as far as what Yibur Hashana is concerned, therefore once there's a Beis Din with a dissension in it, which is based on a Psak of Rov, then we go up to the highest level, and that is Shiva. So that means according to Yad Ramah, there's dissension in the Beis Din of Shlosha or in the Beis Din of Chamisha, then we go up to seven. If there's no dissension and it's a Beis Din with the decision of Kulam, then even at the level of three judges they can make a decision and be Ma'abar the Shana. If they can't get a unanimous decision, maybe in five judges they can get a unanimous decision and they can be Ma'abar the Shana. But if they can't succeed in doing so and they only end up with a Rov, then we're going to have to go up to the ideal Beis Din, and that's the Beis Din of Shiva. They have absolute jurisdiction over Yibur Hashana, even if there's a dissenting opinion, even if it's only a Beis Din Shel Rov. But again, keep in mind, Rabosai, that this whole process, which is made up perhaps of one stage, or two stages, or three stages, depending upon whether you can get a unanimous decision, this is all because of the power of dissension, meaning that ultimately we may have a situation where in Yibur Shana the dissenting view is so powerful that we're going to drop the ball right away. So let's say, for example, the first judge in this entire series, in the entire chronology, he says we have to be Ma'abar the Shana, and then two judges that he approaches on his court, they shoot him down.
Done.
At that point, it's done. Because here's where the Rov, according to Yad Ramah, plays a major role. And that is that the Rov could shoot down the Yibur Shana, and it terminate, and the whole story dies right there. So for example, let's say we get to five judges, because we had two who were in favor, and one dissent. And now we get up to five judges. Well, if three out of the five judges outright reject the idea of Yibur Shana, they say it's not necessary, then at that point it dies. So it's interesting that the Rov, in the case of Rov in favor of Yibur Shana, is a kind of a weak Rov, meaning it's not the equivalent of Rov as we know it throughout the Mishnah at the beginning of Masechta Sanhedrin, where the Rov will determine the ultimate ruling. No, the Rov is still pagum, in a little sense. It's a little bit incomplete. It's still blemished. It's not a Beis Din of unanimity. And therefore, we're going to have to take it to the ideal bezin of what?
Seven.
But on the other hand, that's what I wanted to point out. The paradox of the Yad Ramah is that in a certain sense, the Rove is supreme and wins the day in the negative sense, you know, to shoot it down.
What happens if it's not 3-2 in the 5, but it's 4-1?
4-1 is still the same. We're going to have to take it up to 7. As long as it's one dissenting
opinion. But once you have 4, you're going to have, even with 7, you're going to have a majority.
Well, again, the deliberation starts all over again. I mean, again, that's going to be the second machlokas, whether they have to go through the deliberation all over again. But I wanted to finish with the first machlokas.
Yeah.
So again, the first opinion that we have on the scorecard is whom? Everybody, the Yad Ramah. Okay, who disagrees with the Yad Ramah? That's Rabbeinu Yonah. Also, one of the Sephardic Rishonim, and he says the following. He says, "Afim iskimu kol ashlosha, o kol achamisha la'aber, ein dai b'kach." Even if there's a unanimous decision, either in the case of 3, or even in a unanimous decision of 5 judges, tzarech shiva anoshim. We always require a Beis Din of 7 to rule in a case of Iber Shana. So the lower courts are only at a level of deliberation. They begin the process of deliberation. And even if they're all on board, and the unanimous decision is on the part of 3 judges, or even 5 judges, that we have... So in other words, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, the 3 judges and the 5 judges are really just stepping stones in the process of deliberation. But ultimately, the authority to be Ma'abar the Shana, says Rabbeinu Yonah, is exclusively in the hands of which Beis Din?
7.
Do you see how fundamentally how fundamentally he disagrees and rejects the Yad Ramah? The Yad Ramah says fundamentally the authority to be Ma'abar the Shana is in a Beis Din of what?
3.
Of 3. As long as we can get the ideal Beis Din, we can come up with a Beis Din of a unanimous decision. And if we can't do it in 3, then we'll go up to 5. But certainly the authority is vested in a Beis Din of 5. We only need 7 because we weren't successful in getting that unanimous decision at the level of 5. Comes along Rabbeinu Yonah, says, "Nein, what this Bryce is talking about is a process of deliberation until we finally reach the level of Beis Din, that after all these different deliberations, we can finally settle down, and we have a Beis Din of Shiva, and that Beis Din of Shiva is endowed with the authority to be Ma'abar the Shana." But listen to the proof Rabbeinu Yonah brings he adduces to support his position. Sharei Lahalon, he says, the next sugi that we're about to learn, Doreshes HaGemara Min HaMikros, the Gemara is going to darshan from Psukim in Tanakh, Shetzorah, that we require 3 judges, then 5 judges, then 7. There's a pasuk for 3 judges. There'll be a source in the Torah for 5, and finally a source in the Torah for 7. It means that each one of these courts has a role to play in the process of Ma'abar the Shana. And ultimately, we need a Beis Din of 7. And that's going to be established by a pasuk. It's not just that we want to expand the deliberations, and we want to get to the point where we finally have 7 judges on the court, and 7 is a really round number, not a round number in the sense of even number, but in Torah Hashkafa, 7 is really a bombastic, a powerful Beis Din. We have 7 judges, and they made a decision. No, that's not it. It's not just the culmination of trying to get to a final decision. No. It's that the Torah gives chashivus to the number 7. Again, if it was logical, then why would the Gemara need a pasuk? So if we go to the Yad Ramah, his approach to the numbers 3, 5, and 7 is a logical approach, and we're just trying to get that unanimous decision. If we can't get it, then we have the 7 judges, which is really a supreme status of a Beis Din of Shiva, and they're certainly vested in the power, even if they need a rov and they cannot get a unanimous decision, to be Ma'abar the Shana. But basically, according to the Yad Ramah, this is not a process. Because every single Beis Din that we're talking about, whether it's 3, 5, or 7, is invested with the power and the authority to be Ma'abar the Shana. But just as a separate halach that we need a unanimous decision until we finally reach the highest court. But all this is because each Beis Din unto itself has the power. So basically, according to the Yad Ramah, We only need three judges to make up a Beis Din for Iber Shana. And then the whole discussion about adding another two judges, that's all based on human logic. That we're not happy with the decision that's made by majority. We really want to get everyone on board. If we can do that at the level of three, that would be fine. At the level of five, that would be fine. And if not, we'll have to bring in the big steaming rollers. You know, we have to give the Beis Din shel Shiva. Comes along with Beinoni, he says, no. This is not derived from logic. This is derived in the Gemara from different mikros. That we need three, we need five, we need seven, and all of these three categories of a Beis Din are required in the process of Iber Shana, because each one is derived from another pasuk. Ube Hechrech, says Rabbeinu Yonah, this is absolutely critical that we have a Beis Din Shel Shiva, because we derive the Beis Din Shel Shiva from Chesukim. Ela kavana sagamara he sheim kala shlosho ruba and sovrim sheish la'aber. If we're ready through the deliberations for a majority decision on the part of three judges or a unanimous decision, then let's go on to the next stage and intensify and enhance the deliberations. She yesh le hosif aleim ochnaim. And then finally, if we've gotten to a serious decision on the part of most of the five judges, or maybe even all the five judges, that there's just cause for being ma'arav l'shana, then what we do is we reach the ultimate level, which again is derived from a pasuk, the authoritative Beis Din for Shana of seven judges. So again, Rav Osai, there's a tremendous nafkamina here between the Yad Ramah and Rabbeinu Yonah. Whereas according to Rabbeinu Yonah, we must arrive at seven judges. According to Yad Ramah, no. All we have to arrive at is a unanimous decision. And that can be made on the part of a Beis Din of three, or a Beis Din of five. And if not, we go, you know, we have to have recourse to the super Beis Din of seven.
But what does Rabbeinu Yonah do with the last part of the Mishnah? In Gamor begin of Berach?
So then Rabbeinu Yonah is going to have to say that this derivation that we're about to learn of seven, that's the way it is in an ideal situation. But we can go back to the Beis Din of Shlosha.
Even against the Psukim.
Psukim are only telling me what's l'chatchila, the ideal. Again, it's a lot smoother according to the Yad Ramah, because the Yad Ramah is then going to say that Gavru B'Shlosha means that it was an unanimous decision, and here the Torah doesn't need any further deliberations. The Torah was from the get-go very happy with three judges. The only reason that the Torah required another two judges is because it didn't go as smoothly as we expected.
So it begs the question as to why. So I guess they're just saying you're going to go with seven, and you know it before you even start. And if that's the case, the three and the five are just sorting it out so it's easier for the seven.
Well, it's easier, but why waste the time of the judges, so to speak? You know, the time of the judges is yakar amitzius, you know, they're busy people.
So the three and the five sort of get all the other stuff out of the way.
Yeah, in other words, if we can shoot it down at the level of three, because two judges out of the three say there's no point, that's great. And let's not even bother with it. If we finally get two judges, then let's see what five judges will say. And if five judges deliberate and they still can't get a majority, shoot it down right there. Don't bother with a Beis Din of Sheva. If, on the other hand, you finally get to the level where it's a serious enough discussion and there's grounds for Ibur, such that three out of five judges agree that we should be Ma'avra the Shana, then at that point, now we're ready for really embarking upon the process of Ibur Shana, and therefore we go to the Beis Din of Ibur Shana, which is the Beis Din of Sheva. And Joseph points out very well that even according to Rabbeinu Yonah, the Beis Din Shel Shiva is l'chatchil, is the ideal, but what the Torah is saying is that if all things are equal, we need a Beis Din Shel Shiva. Now I want to introduce another machlokas, and here I want you to tell me whether it's in any way related to the machlokas between the Yad Ramah and Rabbeinu Yonah. Okay. Nechleku Rishonim Im li achar shemosifim mechamisha l'shiva, what happens after we go up from five to seven? So in other words, we're at the point in which we've had deliberations amongst the five, and the majority of the Beis Din of five have decided that there's just cause for being ma'abra the shon. Now we added two judges to the court. He says the following. Now we have a machlokas rishonim about the seven judges. Ha'im, according to the first shita, ma'abrim es hashana miyad, ubali sheyisu v'yitn. In other words, the masa umatan, which we called in English the deliberation, that took place at the level of 3 and upgraded to the level of 5, and now we're finished with deliberations. As far as Hilchas Masa Umatan is concerned, we have a majority rule, and that's enough. We need the formality of ruling, of declaring the Shana to be Muberes, and in that formality we need what?
7
judges, so we're going to have to add 2, but there's no need for Masa Umatan. The Masa Umatan was already concluded with the 5 judges once by majority they decided that there was cause to this. Oh, now he's up to the second sheet of the Rishonim. Again, the names I don't have for you right now. Tsarech Leshe Velisa Velitain Bishnia. Bishnia means a second time around. Bishiva. In other words, what is the purpose of the Bezdin Shel Shiva? Is it A, it is a formality? We need the Bezdin Shel Shiva simply to have the Geshmak, you know, have the status of a Bezdin Shel Shiva, which is the Bezdin for Iber Shana? Or no, the 7 judges are in charge or are responsible as if we were starting the case from the get-go, from 0, and we need not only a final decision and a ruling to, you know, proclamation, we also need a Masa Umatan. And he claims in this footnote, in the name of the Rashash, the Rashash was one of the greats about 100, maybe 125, 150 years ago. The Rashash claims that this is a machlokas between Rashi and the Rambam. He says that if you read Rashi carefully, it seems that according to Rashi, you only need the 7 to hand down a ruling. But the Masa Umatan that took place previously with 3 and 5, that's sufficient. But the Rambam, here in his commentary on the Mishnayos, says explicitly, and he repeats himself in his Mishnah Torah in Hilchas Kiddush HaChodesh Perek Talid, that the Bezdin of Shiva needs Masa Umatan as if nothing had happened. And they have to go back to the scoreboard and start with the deliberation. So Rabbi Moshe, again, let's just summarize. We have a double machlokas Rishonim here on 2 issues. And the question is, are they independent or interdependent? That's what I want to ask you. The first machlokas between the Ad Ramah and the Rabbeinu Yonah revolves around the following issue. Do we need a Bezdin of Shiva? According to the Ad Ramah, we do not need a Bezdin of Shiva. We only need a Bezdin of Shiva if we have, again, using this inverted commas phrase, an inferior Bezdin, which means a Bezdin that has a dissenting opinion that's based on a decision of Rov. Then we have to go up to the ultimate of Shiva. But fundamentally, the authority to be Ma'abed the Shon is vested in a Bezdin of Shlosha. Or shall we take the opinion of Rabbeinu Yonah that no, the authority for Iber Hashanah is vested in what Bezdin? Bezdin Shel Shiva. And in all cases we need a Bezdin Shel Shiva. And the unanimous decision of a Bezdin Shel Shlosha of Shel Chamisha is very wonderful. You know, it really saves the day because it allows us to go to the next step, you know, the next stage. But ultimately we must have Shiva. Now we have another machlokas. And there are 2 opinions as to whether or not the Bezdin Shel Shiva needs deliberation. Can they just issue the ruling, or they need deliberation? So the question I wanted to throw out to you today is there any relationship between these 2 machlokas, or are they independent? I see, Steve, you're shaking your head. I don't know which direction.
The second one is like Rabbeinu Yonah, that you just need 7 without deliberation.
Right, in the second controversy, if you don't need deliberation, then apparently there's a special status to the Bezdin of Shiva. And that, you're saying, would really reflect the Shita of Rabbeinu Yonah.
Right.
Because Rabbeinu Yonah says that the Torah has designated for Iber Shana, the jurisdiction for Iber Shana, is in the hands of a Bezdin Shel Shiva. And if that be the case, then it could be that we've passed all the necessity and the preliminary stages of deliberation. And not only that, you know, we seem to have a solid consensus, maybe even a unanimous decision that all the pieces of the puzzle are fit into place. There's no reason to hesitate with going ahead with Iver Shana. But the Torah, and we learn from a pasuk, defines the Beis Din for Iver Shana as what? As a Beis Din shall Shiva. But if on the other hand you're going with whom? With the Yad Ramah. The Yad Ramah says basically the Beis Din is a Beis Din shall Shlosha. And the whole chronology here, the whole process of going through 3 and then 5 and then 7 is one of deliberation, then it makes sense that in that context you might accept those Rishonim who say that the Beis Din Shel Shiva also has to have deliberation and they should start from scratch.
The second one wasn't based, there was no mention of unanimity, right?
For what? For the Beis Din Shel Shiva.
Yeah, was there, I mean before, in other words, if there's a 5-0 vote coming in, then they don't need to deliberate because there's already 5 votes anyway. It's a waste of time.
Well, yes and no. I'll tell you why. The assumption of Beis Din, do you remember back in the day, I don't remember if it was Daf Hei or Daf Vav, we had a statement in the Gemara that you should always try to add judges if you can. Mm-hmm. I mean, what's the point? I mean, we already have a unanimous decision. I'm giving you an extreme case. Mm-hmm. But the answer is when you... It's like, are you familiar with the phrase Panim Chadosh is Bo'olakan? You know, we say Sheva Brachos when a new person is at the meal. Mm-hmm. Panim Chadosh means that sometimes you add a judge who's on a higher level, you know, has a new perspective. He's mm-hmm. a greater Baki with greater experience. Yeah, he remembers that 50 years ago when he sat on a court, or maybe he was an apprentice who was, how do you say in English, his taklut, he was doing observation. And he was observing the Beis Din. He remembers that 50 years ago in the Friedrich Gedar, you know, when Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi was alive, you remember we'd have a similar issue, and here's the way Rabbi, you know, said. So he's the Gadol Sheba Chabura. And you know, usually, you know, we live in a society where the older you get, the less you're worth on the market. You know what I mean? It's like older people have a trouble getting a job, right? I mean, there must be exceptions to that rule, but I don't know in what field. Just tell me because I want to learn that field. But you know, in the Torah, what?
Magid Shir.
Thank you. I'll take that as a compliment. But in the case of Torah, it works in the opposite direction. You know, you started with a Beis Din of 3, you went up to a Beis Din of 5. Now let's look for another 2 judges. Oh, we're already ripe for making a major decision which is going to impact on Jewish history to add another month. It's going to change the calendar for years to come. Let's look around for another 2 judges who are very busy. We didn't want to bother them at stages 1 and 2. These are the Gedolim. These are the guys who remember what went on, you know, back in the time, you know. Okay. It's like, you know, you talk to an older person today, and very often they'll tell you, I'll say it in Yiddish, they'll say, Amolik Gedolim. Did you ever hear that phrase? Oh, I remember. You know what I'm saying? They have such trouble. Older people have trouble getting used to the young upstarts. It's like, I think I told you this once, that when Dr. Lamb was elected president of the Yeshiva University, my father had a major problem because he knew Dr. Revel, who was his president when he was at Yeshiva College, and then he knew Dr. Belkin, who was a genius of geniuses, and Dr. Lamb was great, but you know, he was a schnook, he was a youngster. You know, the older people have trouble with it. They remember the Gedolim, you know. It's unbelievable how in the tradition of Torah, you know, if you can link yourself back to a previous generation, it's a tremendous inspiration. I mean, I'll never forget, the Rav told us that in his youth he met an elderly statesman who said to the Rav, I knew someone who was at the Beis HaLevi's Bris. I mean, that takes you back like 2.5 centuries. Do you gentlemen know about Rabbi Kellerman? So he has a very famous video presentation. Have you ever seen it? It's kedai to see. It's really, first of all, it's just a lot of fun to watch. I mean, he has all the, you know, all the advanced technology there. But he shows you that he meets somebody at the Kotel, and he asks the guy his name. And then he shows you, based on the name and the name of his father, that you can go back all the way back to Adam Arishon, you know what I'm saying? And you can trace all the generations. And that's it. So you ask me, why would we start a deliberation if we already have a unanimous decision of 5 judges? The answer is that if the additional 2 judges, you know, come with a new perspective and with greater, you know, linkage to the past and expertise, they may change the whole thing around.
Well, that throws out the third one, because the third one says there's no deliberation. They're just there to stamp it and approve it.
Oh, so that's what Steve, I think, was pointing out, that it could be that according to the opinion that you don't need deliberation at the level of seven, we're going to go back to the opinion that we saw in Rabbeinu Yonah, right? Rabbeinu Yonah says that there's such a, you know, it could be that Rabbeinu Yonah would agree partially, Hodas Bal Din B'Mikzas, to the Yad Ramah, that as far as deliberation is concerned, three is good, five is even better. But the requirement of seven, that's an absolute requirement. That's a formal legal requirement. Okay, Rabbi, so now we're about to embark upon a learning of Tanakh. Okay, I don't know how many of you enjoy Tanakh, but the next sugya without Tanakh, without opening a Tanakh here, we're quite lost. So let's begin with Malachim Beis. Just one second. At the end of Malachim Beis, we're in chapter Chaf Hei, and we're in Pasuk Yudches. Now, what's going on here is what's called Churban Bayis Rishon. It can't be coincidental that we're learning this during the 3 weeks. I mean, this has got to be Min HaShamayim. It's a very sad chapter here about Nebuzaradan. He was Nebuchadnezzar's right-hand man. In English, they call him the chief executioner. I'm not exactly sure how many tens of thousands, if not more, Jews that he personally put to death. So he's called the Rav HaTabochet. And the Pasuk describes at this point how he takes out the leaders of Klal Yisrael for death. He starts with the Kohen Gadol, whose name was Sraya, and he goes to the second Kohen, which is called the Skan Kohen Gadol, or the Mishnah Kohen Gadol, his name was Tzafanya. And then he gets to the point where he takes out the Shloshes Shomrei Hasaf, which is translated here as three gatekeepers. So these were the security men who would watch the Beis HaMikdash, guard it, make sure nobody would come in and steal any of the vessels. You know, the vessels were very rare and had holiness, and we didn't want anyone to mess with them. So they appointed three Shomrei Asaf. So Safia means gates. So they were the gatekeepers. I'm not exactly sure, Rav Osai, whether these were Talmidei Chachamim, men of status. You can take a look and see if there's any comment here, who the Shomrei Asaf were. I have a feeling, and don't quote me on this, that these were like what we call strongmen, you know what I mean? If I use the following term, maybe some of you will relate. These were the bouncers, you know what I mean? By the bouncers, you know, you pass by a nightclub and you want to get in, and they're the bouncers. I mean, you mess with them, man, they'll pulverize you. Well, for the Nebuzaradan, that was no problem. He just had them taken out. And that's one plus. Then we go on to this butcher, you know, who's taking out more Jews, and he takes out Chamisha Anoshim Miroe Pnei HaMelech. Now there are two things here, I'll read the English translation, that you have to keep in mind. One is the number five, but more important is the Mem. Meroe Pnei HaMelech. So let's just see how he translates it. He says the following. He says, five men from the advisors who see the king's face. In other words, he's taking the mem and he's saying from. He's translating it in English as from. Now, if I say that I take out five from, what does that imply?
There are more.
That there are more. So from the advisors, who are called Roe Pnei HaMelech, who see the king's face, these must have been very high officers in Tzidkiyahu's, you know, Malchus. And he takes out five of these advisors. Now, the Pasuk doesn't indicate how many Roi Pnei HaMelech were there. You know, advisors who really, you know, what would you call it in Israeli politics? The inner cabinet? What do they call it? The security cabinet? You know, I mean, in every country, you have different cabinets. You know, you have the cabinet which the prime minister will actually sit with them face to face. You know, he's not going to invite, you know, hundreds of people to advise him. So these are called the Roi Pnei HaMelech. They're on the highest level. Now, let's put what can we put here to mark our place? Okay, we'll use this ribbon here. And now, maybe Steve, if you don't mind, if you could turn to Yirmiyahu HaNavi, okay, and Perek Nun Beis, I think that's Perek 52. Let's see if I'm right here, just 1 second. Because the same story is told in Yirmiyahu HaNavi. There's a lot of overlap between Malachim and Yirmiyahu. So let me just tell you. Is it Nun Beis?
Nun Beis.
Oh. So now, if you take a look here, I don't have the Malbim in front of me. I'm not going to ask you to get me the Malbim. Maybe we'll do that for tomorrow. But there's almost a word-for-word repeat here of what we saw at the end of Malachim Beis. But there's a discrepancy here. And it says the following. It says, Vayikach Rabba Tabachim Esroya HaKoin, blah, 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 Tzfarni HaKoin, Mishnah, Shlosha Shomer Asaf. Word-for-word, a repeat. But then when he gets past the Shlosha Shomrei Asaf, instead of five Anoshim Miroi Pnei HaMelech, he's got Vishiva Anoshim Miroi Pnei HaMelech. Now even here he has the mem of Mei Roi Pnei HaMelech, which implies that there were even more than seven of these advisors to the king who saw the face of the king and were the highest level of advisors. So again, I'm not sure exactly how to reconcile this apparent contradiction between Malachim and Yirmiyahu, because in Malachim it says there are five Roei Pnei HaMelech, and in Yirmiyahu it says there were seven Roei Pnei HaMelech, and in both cases it says Mei Roei Pnei HaMelech. I'm not sure. Maybe there was, you know, initially he took out five and then he took out another two. It's not clear to me. We'll have to look in the Mefarshei HaTanakh. Now, the Gemara asks a very interesting question. Hani Shlosha V'Chamisha V'Shiva K'neged Mi. Now listen, Rabbosai, this is a very odd Gemara. Anyone who's familiar with Masechta Brachos, especially the fourth Perek, knows that the phrase K'neged Mi is quite common. For example, we have three aliyos to the Torah, right? Kohen Levi Yisrael. So K'neged Mi. So one man Yomer says K'neged Kohenim Levim Yisraelim, another man Yomer says K'neged Torah Neviim Uksuvim. Or for example, in Tefillah, we have three brachas at the beginning of Tefillah, and then we have 12 in the middle, and then we have three at the end. Now we have 13 in the middle, whatever the numbers are. The Gemara is going to ask, K'neged Mi. And the K'neged Mi means that when you're serving Hashem, you should have in mind some sort of deeper kavana. You know, that the number itself of aliyos or brachos or whatever it might be has some significance, and you should think about that significance. But here, Ribbono Shel Olam, we're just talking about deliberations, we're talking about a judgment, we're talking about a decision to be Ma'arba L'Shana, and frankly speaking, I don't understand, what is this K'neged Mi? And the Gemara is going to look for like symbolic representation of these three numbers in a sequence of 3, 5, and 7. We've already seen such a sequence here, which is going to be one of the opinions of the Gemara, In the Churban Abayis, at the time of the Churban Abayis, when Nebuzaradan is taking out the leaders of the Jewish community, he takes them out 3, he takes out 5, he takes out 7. You know, one really is wondering what this is all about. You know, I understand that there's a Bezin Shel Shlosha, we've derived that from Psukim in the Torah, right? Like, for example, it says Elohim 3 times. You remember that Gemara that we had at the beginning of the Masechta? And then we want to add more in order to get more deliberations, enhance the Beis Din. We can't add an even number because that's not going to do it for us. We need a Beis Din nota. But this K'neged Mi, and Pliba, the Gemara has two interpretations of what Chad De'ime means. It says, the first opinion is, Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Nachmeni V'Chad De'ime. The phrase Chad De'ime means one with him. Now, Rabbi Yitzchak was supported by another one of his colleagues, but the fact that it says Chad De'ime means he was a lesser colleague. He wasn't on the same level of wisdom and Chochmas HaTorah as Rabbi Yitzchak. Umano, and who is this sidekick? You know, who is his assistant who agreed with him? His name was Rabbi Shimon ben Pasi. That's according to one version. The Amrila, we have another version that it was really Rabbi Shimon ben Pasi. He was the main initiator here of what we're about to embark upon to understand these numbers 5, 3, 5, and 7. The Chad De'ime, and he had a sidekick who also supported his position. Umanu, who was that? Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Nachmeni, meaning Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Nachmeni was not the gadol. You know, he wasn't the main giant here. He was just the second in command. Okay, but whichever way it is, you know, this was a joint opinion of those two Amoraim, that's Rav Yitzchak Bar Nachmeni and Rav Shimon ben Pasi, and they had different formulations of how we understand the numbers of Bezdin for Ibra Hashanah, whether 3, and then we go up to Bezdin of 5, Bezdin. So Chad Amar, according to one school of thought, Kineged Birchas Kohen. Now Rashi points out here, you'll see 3 lines before the end, that Birchas Kohanim is going to give us all these 3 numbers, 3, 5, and 7. How many brachos make up Birchas Kohanim? So you have Yirecha Hashem v'Yishmerecha, Yirecha Hashem v'Yonelecha, Yisa Hashem v'Pon Avilecha. We have 3 brachos, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Then we're going to ask another question, and that is, how many words in English, right? How many words do we have? So we're going to take a look at each one of these 3 brachas. So in the first bracha, we have Yivarecha Hashem Vishmech, we have 3 words. Okay, so we have 3 brachas, and the first bracha is made up of 3 words. And then we have Yor Hashem Ponav Elecha Vichunek, we have 5 words. Mm-hmm. And then Yis Hashem Ponav Elecha Vyasem Lecha Shalom, we have 7 words. So within Birchas Kohanim itself, we can break it down to 3, 5, and 7. Now here, I have the following question. I mean, with all due respect to the Birchas Kohanim, what in the world does that have to do with Ibra Hashanah? And I was racking my brains on this. And the truth is that I found a footnote here, but he doesn't address this question. He addresses a different question, which I'll share with you in just a minute. And he says the following, that we have a problem if you have three words in the first bracha, 5 in the second, and 7. So what's the total number of words? Right, 3 plus 5 plus 7 is how much? 15? So 15, so why don't we require 15 judges? That's his problem. He doesn't seem to be bothered by the problem of why Birchas Kohanim is relevant to our discussion.
Steinsaltz has something.
Yeah, I'll get to Steinsaltz for first me. You know, I get, because he's not here, so I wouldn't be, you know, I'm not insulting him if he's not here. So I want to tell you what I have to say, but before I tell you that, I want to read you one thing here. In the Masifta, he writes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have blessed all of Klal Yisrael with one bracha, but instead God wanted multiple brachas. And therefore, because of the Chavivas of Klal Yisrael, he made out of one long bracha 3 shorter brachas. Okay, fine. Now, let's see if this could be perhaps a little bit of a germ of an idea as to what the connection is between Birchas Kohanim and Ibur Shana. So what I want to do is, let's go back to the Gemara that we did on Wednesday of last week, that according to one Mandi Omar, in the case of Kiddush HaChodesh, I'm going back to the Chodesh now, whether it's Mole or Choser, then if we pass the 30th day, we don't need Bezdin to be Makadish the 31st day. And if you remember the Gemara's language, it says, that up in the heavens, in the heavenly court, with all the Malachi Ashores and all the Sarim and Ofanim, they already decided that the day number 31 is going to be Rosh Chodesh. That's the Lashon HaGemara. Now I'm thinking to myself, and again you can fight me on this if you like, that I have a Kal V'chomer. If there's a Beis Din Shel Shamayim that's going to decide about the Kiddush HaChodesh, how much more so in the case of Ibur Shanah, which has so much more of an impact on Klal Yisrael, the holidays and whatever Shtaros and Malachim and all the different Nafkaminas of adding another month, how much more so do we need a Beis Din Shel Mal? So now we have to ask ourselves the following question. If this is such a stupendous decision that's going to impact on the calendar for years to come, and maybe for all of Jewish history, I'd be as Goel, and therefore the Beis Din Shel Mala is making a decision,
So what's going on? Well, what are we dealing with here with Besdin? I'm asking a quasi philosophical question.
How does a Besdin Shemala? How do we know Sakam Besdin Shemala?
Right, correct. And I want to go even a step further, Joseph. Not only would we not know the Psak, but that they in Besdin Shemala are looking to Besdin Shemata to make the decision here. The ultimate decision, or shall I say the confirmation, will come in the Beis Din Shemala. But we have to take the initiative here. And that's called Mekadesh Yisrael Vazmanet, that God sanctified us, and we're doing something which is really having a tremendous impact up in the heavens, and up in the heavens they are deciding to confirm what we did down on earth. And in that sense, the purpose of the Hebrew calendar is for the Mo'adim. I mean, Shabbos is set. That's Kriya V'Kayim. You know, nothing's going to change. But as far as the Shloshes Regalim is concerned, when is that going to fall? That's going to be a major decision. So here I want to make one leap of faith, which you can slug me up if you don't like it. But I want to suggest the following, that the purpose of the Mo'adim is the ultimate avod of Hashem. What do I mean? We gather together the people from all four corners of Eretz Yisrael, and we bring them up to the Beis HaMikdash to serve God. And each one has to bring his karbon, and that's called Aliyah L'Regel. So, in a sense, God is the King of Kings, but He wants all of His citizens, all of His, what word am I looking for in English? Not citizens, subjects. Okay. Excellent, thank you so much. His subjects to come forward at the time of the regel, and dedicate themselves to the avdus of Hashem. So ultimately, the participation of Klal Yisrael in coronating God as King is the calendar that includes not only Shlosh Regalim, it includes also Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. So all this is dependent upon the calendar. And the Pella, the amazing paradox here is that we're talking about Malchus Shamayim. Well, there is a business, there is a judiciary system up in Shamayim. So if we're involved in determining the calendar year, which is going to determine how and when we should be dedicated as subjects to God and serve Him as the King, l'chora it's the Bezdin Shalmala that should be calling those shots. The answer is no. That Bezdin Shalmala says to the Bezdin Shalmata, you make the decision and we'll confirm your decision. Now, if you look in Birchas Kohanim, what are the last two words in Birchas Kohanim? No, afterwards there's another pasuk, which again, you're right, it's technically it's not part of it. It says, V'somu eshmi al b'nei Yisrael, and then what are the last two words? V'ani avarchem. What I'm thinking is the following. Here is the paradigmic process in which God turns to man and says to man, you bless the people. In this case, He turns to the Kohanim. They are sanctified with Kedushas Kohanim. They have an amazing power of bracha. And now Hashem says, V'ani avarchem. With all due respect, you need my confirmation. So the paradigm of the human initiative that's confirmed by the Besdin Shalmala is Birchas Kohanim. And since the entire process of Iber Shana is part of Malchus Shamayim, to set up a calendar in which during certain periods of time that is sanctified, we incarnate God as the King, therefore Birchas Kohanim becomes the paradigm of the human initiative that's totally dependent upon the confirmation of the Besdin Shalmala. But here I have the following question. What is each one of these three batei dinim? There's a bezin of three, there's a bezin of five, there's a bezin of seven. Are they functioning independent, each one independent of the other? And the sum total is, if necessary, would be the paramount bezin. The paramount bezin is going to be what?
Seven.
The bezin of seven. So I'm suggesting that perhaps that might answer the next question that he has here. And he says, why don't we require a Beis Din of 15 judges? Why? Because if we count up the tevos in Birchas Kohanim, starting with 3, going up to 5, and culminating with 7, we end up with 15 psuk, with 15 tevos. So he gives the following answer. He says the following. Each one of the 3 brachos is a separate entity. It's not one bracha that's made up of 15 tevos, but rather paske, in other words, when the Torah gives us 3 psukim, what it's defining is 3 separate brachos. One bracha is made up of 3, the next is made up of 5, and the third is made up of 7, and each bracha has its own impact. He says, therefore, it's not sufficient to have one Beis Din of 15 judges, because that's not what happens in the case of Birchas Kohanim. You need 3 different brachas, and each bracha is a separate independent entity. He says, therefore, Ein kan bracha achas shel chamesh esrei tevos, v'chein linyan dayanim, is k'shemosifim v'holchim zeh al zeh. Again, he doesn't develop it a little further, but I think what he's trying to indicate here is that each Beis Din is an entity unto itself. Who does that sound like, my friends?
The Yad Ramah,
excellent. This sounds very similar to the Yad Ramah, that basically you could have a Beis Din of 3, and if there's no unanimous decision, then we need a Beis Din of 5, and if there's no unanimous decision, we need the ultimate Beis Din of 7. Maybe the Yad Ramah fits in very beautifully to this explanation, that just like in Birchas Kohanim there are 3 independent entities, 3 brachos, so too in the case of Beis Din for Kiddush for Ibra Hashanah, what we have is 3 separate entities. And Eichinami, if we would somehow, if it would be enough to get by with one entity, that would be fine. Again, I don't know what this would mean in terms of Birchas Kohanim. I can't answer that question. You know, if there was a unanimous decision of all 3 judges, then we would accept the first bracha, Yirech Hashem Yishrecha. That would be all inclusive. I don't know. That part of the puzzle I can't fit in. But be that as it may, one fundamental principle we get here is that there's a chashivus to each one of these batei dinim vis-a-vis Ibra Hashanah, not just vis-a-vis the deliberation as Rabbeinu Yonah would have it. You know, that we really, the Beis Din of 3 is impotent. The Beis Din of 5 is impotent. They don't have any power to be Ma'abed Hashanah. We're just in a process of trying to decide maybe we should drop the ball. There's no point to Ibra Hashanah. There's not enough justification. Why bother the Beis Din, which is the Beis Din of 7 judges? But Rabosai, I want to say the following. There's one element here in the equation to Birchas Kohanim which I think would support the position of Rabbeinu Yonah, and even more so the position of those Rishonim quoted by the Rashash that hold that the judgment of 7 does not require deliberation. Here's the question I want to ask you. Again, I'm not asking a why question because we don't know the Ribbono Shel Olam's thinking, but why do we need 3 brachas? Why not one bracha? So I think what's going on here is that the brachos are in ascending order, which means that the first bracha is basic level. Now we're asking for a greater bracha until finally we ask for the greatest bracha. And the greatest bracha ends with the word shalom. And Chazal say over and over again throughout Shas that the greatest bracha is the bracha of shalom. Shalom means shlemus, it means harmony, it means everything you want it to mean is shalom. And therefore, if the numbers 3, 5, and 7 of the 3 respective 3 brachas are in ascending order, it means that the greatest of all brachas is the last bracha. And that's in a sense the apex, that's the all-inclusive bracha. Maybe that would reflect the sheet of Rabbeinu Yonah, that the Beis Din ultimately should have Beis Din of 7. They're on a separate, you know, category unto themselves. In fact, some Rishonim say they don't even need Masumat, they don't even need deliberation. And all they need is a decision, and they have to hand down the rule. Is there a possibility, though, that when we add judges to the court, going from 3 to 5, 5 to 7, then we're going down. We're going to a what's the opposite? Descending, right? It's descending. But what would that mean in Birchas Kohanim? I'm not sure. Just one second. In Birchas Kohanim, it would seem that it's going in ascending order, not just because of the, not just because of the numbers of words. Just one second. What does it mean? See, let's take the Yad Ramah for a second. The Yad Ramah says we already have what we need in a Beis and Shel Shlosh. The only problem is there's a dissenting view. The dissenting view puts a shadow of a doubt in our mind. It plants doubts in our mind. Maybe we don't need the Ibrashan. If we don't need it, leave it out. Innocent until proven guilty. You know what I'm saying? Then we got it to five. They also have the power, according to Yad Ramah, to be Makadish, to be Ma'abra the Shon, correct? But there's still a dissenting view till we finally get to the ultimate base. So I'm just thinking that maybe, according to the Yad Ramah, we don't have to add judges in an ascending order, you know, look for greater judges than, you know, that could put a new spin on it, because we basically, we already have what? We have the wherewithal, the ability in the lower courts to decide. So maybe the lower court of Shlosha should be comprised of the best of the best, the highest level of judges, because if they come up with a unanimous decision, then they can be Ba'abra the Shana. Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't realize how late it is, I apologize. So, B'li Neder, I want to know the following. This is the last question I want to leave you as a thought question. The Gemara now is going to try to go back to this parsha of Nebuzaradan and his killing of the Shomrei Saf and the Roi Pnei HaMelech. And it seems to me that in the context of that approach, we're going down in an ascending order. Because you're starting with the original three, and then you're talking about, you know, others who are part of the advisory committee, and then you get to the Roi Pnei HaMelech beyond that. Maybe that's a descending order. But Lamaisa, the halachic decision here that has to be made, when you add judges to the court, are you adding higher level of judges or lower level of judges? Okay, Rabosa, I'm sorry, I apologize, I didn't realize what time it was. Okay, yes, you could.
I think you have good proof that it's descending.
Descending?
Because we're doing 357, but we're skipping the first one, the Mizrach killed, and that was the Kohen Gadol.
The Kohen Gadol, Kohen Gadol.
And then we were going down.
Right. No, for sure we're going down in that. I was just wondering if maybe that depends on whether you learn from Kohenim or you know, from this Kohenim.